Please open your Bibles to Genesis chapter 13. We've been going through a study looking at some characters in the book of Genesis. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And why did God make the earth and man? Revelation 4:11, "Thou art worthy, O Lord, to receive glory and honor and power, for thou hast created all things, and for thy pleasure they were created." God is the creator. We are the created. And he created us to give him worship. Before we get into this, I want to thank everyone for coming out tonight and talking with other people with the virus going around. We are blessed that we have been affected as little as we have. And we are blessed that we have people that desire to come out and worship our Creator. And it looks like I've got about 15 extra minutes, but I'm not going to fill that since we've got a business meeting after this. So we'll take some time. We're going to look this evening at Lot and try to learn some lessons about Lot and about God also from this passage. So remember, God desires to have a relationship with righteous people. God rewards the righteous. He punishes the unrighteous. We see that from the very beginning of time. We looked at Noah, where he was a preacher of righteousness. We looked at Abraham, where he was a righteous man. And we're going to look at Lot. And Peter says in 2 Peter 2:7, "And delivered righteous Lot, who is oppressed by the filthy conduct of the wicked. For that righteous man dwelling among them tormented his righteous soul from day to day by seeing and hearing their lawless deeds." I've heard sermons that painted Lot in a different light. I think the number of times that he is called righteous, we have to take that and then kind of fit our opinions and deductions in line with that. But it's a very interesting story. And I think it's interesting too, when we start and look at this, we have a fatherless nephew and a childless uncle and a special relationship with them. Lot's father was Haran, was Abraham's brother. Haran died. And when Abraham left Ur, he took Lot with him. So Lot did not have a father. And God had made a promise to Abraham that he was going to bless him through his seed. Abraham did not have a son. So there would have been a special relationship. I can relate a little bit to that with my nephew that was here several months ago. And his father died, and I wouldn't say he looks to me like a father, but he has a certain respect for me, and he would do anything for me. And I sent him a message one time, and I said, call me and let me know how you're doing. And not too long after that, he said, "Uncle Bruce, you told me to call you, so I'm calling you." And it's just, there's that family relationship. And there is a special relationship between Abraham and his nephew Lot. Let's begin reading in Genesis chapter 13. And we'll look starting at verse 7. "And there was strife between the herdsmen of Abram's livestock and the herdsmen of Lot's livestock, the Canaanites and the Perizzites, then dwelt in the land. So Abram said to Lot, 'Please let there be no strife between you and me, and between my herdsmen and your herdsmen, for we are brethren. Is not the whole land before you? Please separate from me. If you take the left, then I will take the right, or if you take the right, then I will take the left.' And Lot lifted his eyes and saw all the plain of the Jordan, and it was well watered everywhere before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, like the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt, as you go toward Zoar. Then Lot chose for himself all the plain of Jordan, and Lot journeyed east, and they separated from each other. And Abraham dwelt in the land of Canaan, and Lot dwelt in the cities of the plain, and pitched his tent even as far as Sodom. But the men of Sodom were exceedingly wicked and sinful against the Lord. And the Lord said to Abram, after Lot had separated from him, "Lift your eyes now and look from the place where you are, northward, southward, eastward, and westward. For all the land you see, I give to you and your descendants forever. And I will make your descendants as the dust of the earth, so that if a man could number the dust of the earth, then your descendants also would be numbered. Arise, walk in the land through its length and its width, for I give it to you." Then Abraham moved his tent and went and dwelt by the terebinth tree of Mamre, which are in Hebron, and he built an altar there to the Lord. So we're introduced to Lot in here in Genesis 13, and his eyes are set on the land in Genesis 13:10. Again, speculation is made about this. Was Lot covetous? It doesn't say that, but we're going to learn some lessons from the choice that he made. He may have thought, being younger, thought, boy, this will help me get started. The land is good. I'll be able to support my flocks, and we won't have strife with the herdsmen. My uncle, he knows what to do and how to do things. We don't know what his heart was or why he chose that, but it does not say that he was attracted to the sin of the city. And we do not know if he knew at this time what Sodom was like, because we have Moses writing this down the road. He's looking back and recording the events that happened. And I think with that lesson, there may be even a stronger lesson for us, because if he was attracted toward the sin, that's one thing. But if he didn't even consider the sin there, and he went there, we can see how subtle sin is and how it will affect us and the problems that it will bring onto our life. Let's jump over now to chapter 19. And I've got some slides, and we'll go through parts of 19, and then we'll go back and look at some lessons and a little bit of his life. A couple slides to put in here before I get there. This is going to be part of the area that we're reading about around the Dead Sea. This is a view of it from the northwest. The Dead Sea and mountains of Moab from the west. The Dead Sea was pretty worthless, and the Moabites crossed the Dead Sea at a certain point in one of their efforts to raid. Another thing is recorded in the history. This is an area known as Mount Sodom today, looking at it from the north. But when we get into chapter 19, this is when the angels come to visit Lot, and he is in the city now. But before they lay down, the men of the city, even the men of Sodom, compass the house round, both old and young, all the people from every quarter. Lot tried to stop the people of the city from attacking his guest, but they became even more violent and were going to break in the door. And in verse 10, "But the men, the angels, put forth their hand and pulled Lot into the house to them and shut the door." Verse 11, "They smote the men that were at the door of the house with blindness, both small and great, so that they wearied themselves to find the door. The men of the city were so wicked, they were set on getting these these angels." They didn't know they were angels, but these men, that they might know them carnally. The entire city was wicked. The angels did not find 10 righteous. They only found Lot and his family. The angels asked Lot to get his family together and leave because God had sent them to destroy the city. Verse 14, Lot went out and spake unto his sons-in-laws, which married his daughters, and said, "Up, get you out of this place, for the Lord will destroy this city." But he seemed as one that mocked unto his son-in-laws. And when the morning arose, then the angels hastened, Lot saying, "Arise, take thy wife and thy two daughters, which are here, lest thou be consumed in the iniquity of the city." And while he lingered, the men laid hold of his hand, upon his hand of his wife, and upon the hand of his two daughters, the Lord being merciful unto him, and they brought him forth and set him without the city. And we see the mercy of God. Why was God merciful to him? Because he was a righteous man. Lot was not leaving quickly enough, though, and it might have been fatal to him if the angels had not forced him out of the city. And notice, they saved him with mercy and with fear. And when we get to Jude chapter 1, verse 21, "Keep yourselves in the love of God, looking for the mercy of our Lord Jesus Christ into eternal life. Some have compassion, making a difference, and others save with fear, pulling them out of the fire, hating even the garment spotted by the flesh." Everybody is lost and they need saved. Some we can do a little more gently. Some we need to be a little more forceful and pull them out of the fire. We don't want them to be lost. 19:17, "And it came to pass when they had brought them forth abroad that he said, Escape for thy life. Look not behind thee, neither stay thou in all the plain. Escape to the mountains, lest thou be consumed. Then the Lord rained upon Sodom and upon Gomorrah brimstone and fire from the Lord out of heaven. But his wife looked back from behind him, and she became a pillar of salt." God told Lot to flee to the mountain, but Lot begged to go to one of the cities. God allowed him to go to the city of Zoar, but he found it to be so sinful that he was afraid and finally happy to go to a cave in the mountain. Maybe he had learned a lesson. He had stayed in wicked Sodom too long. And stop and think about this. He lost everything. He lost everything. Remember, at one point, Lot was so wealthy that he and Abraham had to separate because of their herds. He's no longer a wealthy man. He's lost all his herds. He's lost his wife. He's lost his home. He's lost everything. So let's consider some things about Lot. We read that Lot was oppressed, and his righteous soul tormented daily as he witnessed the filthy and vile conduct of the men of Sodom. 2 Peter 2, 7 and 8. What does that mean, that he was vexed or he was tormented? When we are vexed, we are troubled, we are stirred up, we are disturbed. That's the way Lot was. He was stirred up. He was disturbed by what he saw going on. He was oppressed. When you think about oppressed, you think about like the Israelites being enslaved to the Egyptians. They were harassed. They were mistreated. He was tormented. He was afflicted. He didn't feel good. And I wouldn't say he didn't feel good. He felt horrible about all the unrighteousness that was going on around about him. So was it wrong for Lot to be there? If we ask that, we have to ask, is it wrong for us to be anywhere in this world? And we'll look at that a little bit more. But it's just like the illustration of a boat. A boat is designed to be in water, but you don't want the water to get into the boat. We are designed to be in the world, but we don't want the world to get into us or it's going to, like we looked about this morning, that path of sin, it's going to keep going till it causes death. And that's why I would not venture to say what was on Lot's heart when he chose where he did. But we see again the end result of his choice. The end result of his choice. And one of the things to consider as we go through this, Lot's choice to pitch his tent even as far as Sodom weakened his godly influence, no doubt contributed to the spiritual demise of his family. And we need to learn that where we choose to live, how we choose to make our living, and those with whom we choose to associate with will have a temporal and an eternal impact upon us. Those lessons we can take away for sure. The area that Lot chose to live in, he had some other difficulties there too. Because he lived in Sodom, he was captured by enemy kings and led away. That's in Genesis chapter 14. And back to a couple of those slides that I showed you, there is a certain area where the surrounding tribes, the kings, they would go in and raid. That was one of the ways they got what they needed. That was a pretty mountainous desert area, and they would go in and raid. Well, in one of these raids, they captured Lot out of Sodom. And we know that when his uncle Abraham heard of this, what did he do? He went and rescued Lot and brought him back. So there is an impact just from that, from where he lived. So whether or not he was going, he was attracted to the sin there. The fact is, he ended up in that situation. Was it a good situation to be in? No, because the city was so wicked. It was so wicked. You can't say the name Sodom today without thinking of evil that still exists today. So we need to consider us as we look at Lot. When we find, and we may start off innocently and go to a place, and that place can be whatever you want to think of in your mind. You're going to this place, and when you get there, you find out it's the wrong place for you to be. You find out it's the wrong place, I shouldn't be here. So what do you say? Well, it's too late, I'm here now. It's too late, I'm here. Or do you say, well, just this one time, I'm going to stay in this place. Just otherwise, you know, if I had it to do over, I wouldn't do this, but I'll stay here. Or do we do like Joseph when he was in a wrong situation? And what did he do? He fled. He got out of there as fast as we can. What would we do if we found ourselves in a position that tormented our soul, that vexed our soul because of the unrighteousness? And we need to try to keep ourselves out of those situations. But Lot is an example of allowing the influence of the world to bring us into evil situations. The men of Sodom were exceedingly wicked and sinned against the Lord. Genesis 13, 13. And in chapter 18 and verse 32, Abraham asked the Lord, "Let not the Lord be angry, and I will speak but once more. Suppose 10 should be found there." And he said, "I will not destroy it for the sake of 10. When Abraham is talking with God, trying to get God to not destroy the city, they couldn't even find 10 righteous souls in the city. And chapter 19, 15 and 16 that we read, when the morning dawned, the angels urged Lot to hurry, saying, "Arise, take your wife and your two daughters who are here, lest you be consumed in the punishment of the city." Now you stop and think about this. He's in the city. He knows it's going to be destroyed. There are angels there. There are angels there. If angels came and told you to get out of this place because it's going to be destroyed, what would we do? What would we do? Would we get out of here as fast as we can? That environment had an influence on Lot, and his thinking had changed. In verse 16, while he lingered, Lot was hesitating. He was told to escape destruction. He hesitated. The men took hold of his hand and his wife's hand and the hand of his two daughters, the Lord being merciful to him, and they brought him out and set him outside the city. So we see when God tells us to do something, again, it's very basic, and a lot of people don't get this. When we obey, when God tells us to obey, we obey right away, all the way, and in a joyful way. He was hesitating. But here too, we see God's mercy, his mercy demonstrated toward Lot. 19:17, so it came to pass when they brought them outside that he said, "Escape for your life. Do not look behind you, nor stay anywhere in the plain. Escape to the mountains, lest you be destroyed." When we escape the sin of the world, when we escape the world, what do we need to do? We need to look forward. We don't look back. There is a warning. They warned him, "Do not look behind you, nor stay anywhere in the plain." When we escape the world, we need to look forward. We see from Lot that he needed to escape some things, and so do we. Maybe it was materialism that wanted that had a draw on him to stay there. Again, he was a wealthy man, but what good is all your wealth? What good is all of your flocks when God says he's going to destroy it? Do we put our trust in all of our material things, or do we put our trust in God? And in 2 Peter 2, back to the verse that I read at the beginning, I want to read this time starting at verse 4. "For if God did not spare the angels who sinned, but cast them down to hell and delivered them into chains of darkness to be reserved for judgment, and did not spare the ancient world, but saved Noah, one of eight people, a preacher of righteousness, bringing the flood on the world of the ungodly, and turning the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah into ashes, condemned them to destruction, making them an example to those afterward who would live ungodly." So you stop and think about this. When God created the world and the world became wicked, what did he do? He destroyed the world. He sent a flood. He saved righteous Noah. He saved righteous Noah. Now we're about 400 years down in history, and what's going on in the world? It's exceedingly wicked. It's exceedingly wicked. And God told Noah he wouldn't destroy the world again by water. And here it's almost like God is giving us a glimpse of what is going to come at the end of time. Because how are these cities destroyed? Turning the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah into ashes. They were burned up. These cities were burned up. And that, again, is just a little glimpse of what's going to happen when Christ comes back. And we need to escape the worldliness that we are in. Maybe he was selfish. Again, back to the lesson this morning. He worshipped himself more than God. He put himself above God. And his selfishness cost him dearly. He lost everything. And then eventually that led to incest with his daughters. It led to incest with his daughters. And his daughters, maybe when they saw, they looked back and they would have seen their mother died. They lost everything. They lost their home. They look back. They see the city going up in a pillar of smoke. Maybe they think there's nobody else left on the earth. God's about to destroy us all. And they think we need to have seed to raise up. And again, they don't put their trust in God. And they have two children. Each one of them, they get their father drunk, they go into him, they conceive, and they have, each one of them has a child. In chapter 19, the firstborn bore a son and called his name Moab. He's the father of the Moabites to this day. And the younger, she also bore a son and called his name Ben-Ammi. He is the father of the people of Ammon unto this day. And you notice that first son, Moab. And the Moabites became enemies of Abraham's descendants. They were a thorn in the flesh, the Moabites. Yet there's a very famous Moabite, Moabitess, that we all know about. Somebody told me it was your favorite character in the Old Testament. It was Ruth. Ruth the Moabitess. And then she married who? Boaz. Boaz, who was an Israelite. And who descended from Ruth and Boaz? David. And then you have the genealogy of Christ coming from that. And you see God's hand working in everything. Things that you think no good can come out of this. And then the Savior comes through this line. But Lot was vexed. But no, he was tormented. But notice too, how much are we tormented and how much are we vexed by sin? Are we tormented enough to do something about it? Unfortunately, Lot was troubled by sin, but not troubled enough by it to leave it. And how did he escape? The angels had to take him by his hand and physically take him out. We see from Lot, we need to be troubled by sin, but we need to be troubled to the point of doing something about it. We need to try to keep ourselves out of sinful places, out of sinful situations. We definitely don't want to be attracted to it and go toward it. But even if we are drawn into it innocently and realize what we get ourselves into, we need to get ourselves out of it. You see, too many Christians, they leave the world. They abandon the world, but they don't abandon all of those worldly entanglements. And it may be something in business. It may be something in the community, having a certain position. It may be something in our family. We don't want to give up certain family ties. We just need to be careful. And what about the influence that he had over his neighbors? Was he able to convert his neighbors? You stop and think about that. Would he have even tried? He was outnumbered. He was outnumbered. What does Paul tell us in Romans 12:9? We need to abhor sin. We need to hate it. Don't see how close we can get to it. If we get close to it, we need to escape. And Lot needed to escape indecision and delay. Many people have been lost because of indecision and delay. Felix was terrified, but he never obeyed. And what's the lesson for us? Friends, when we learn the truth, when we learn destruction is coming, if we are righteous, we need to get out of that situation that we are in as quickly as we can. Turning the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah into ashes, condemned them to destruction, making them an example to those who afterward would live ungodly. If I'm living ungodly, Sodom and Gomorrah is an example to me, because just like they were burned up, this earth is going to be burned up. And if I'm ungodly, I'm not going to just lose my physical life, but my eternal soul. And he delivered righteous Lot, who was oppressed by the filthy conduct of the wicked. For that righteous man dwelling among them tormented his righteous soul from day to day by seeing and hearing their lawless deeds. Why would we choose to be tormented? Why would we choose to be vexed? We need to learn these lessons from Lot. 1 Corinthians 15:33. Do not be deceived. Evil company corrupts good habits, corrupts good morals. The context, I think, with that is talking about idolatry, but we can apply it to so many different situations. Evil company corrupts good morals. Don't be deceived. Sin, if it is allowed into our life, it will influence us, it will consume us, and it will destroy our faith. What do we need to do? We need to escape. We need to escape, just like the angels told Lot. We need to flee. If there's anybody here this evening that's tormented by sin, you need to escape. You need to flee. There's another judgment that's coming, and the one of Sodom and Gomorrah will be nothing compared to when Christ returns. If there's anybody here this evening that wants to be obedient to the gospel invitation, we invite you to come forward now as we stand and sing.